Welcome to Perspectives. I'm Joan Herman. Today I welcome back Mike McNichol, the director of Clatsop County Public Health, to discuss some new department programs, including a two-year initiative beginning in November to reduce sexually transmitted infections. The department also is constructing a new, more than $1 million hazardous waste disposal facility at the Transfer Center on Williamsport Road in Astoria. It is scheduled to be open later this fall. Those are among the diverse range of services the Public Health Department provides to the county's 37,000 plus residents. McNichol has some 24 years experience in public health and has served as the department's director since 2016 and prior to that as its environmental health supervisor. Before joining the health department, he directed the Yamhill County Health Department from 2007 to 2011. McNichol holds a PhD in public health from Walden University, as well as a master's in public health from the Oregon Health and Science University. This program was pre-recorded. Welcome to the studio, Mike.
Oh, thank you very much.
I'd like to start by having you explain this new initiative to reduce the rate of sexually transmitted infections.
Absolutely. So the concept is that Clatsop County, along with Tillamook and Columbia County, were partnering together to do a regional approach in dealing with sexually transmitted infections. The rates of gonorrhea, chlamydia, and syphilis have gone up around the state as well as nationwide, but in particular on the coastal areas, we've seen big increases, especially in chlamydia. So the idea now is to, in order to get around and reduce these, we're going to work together as a team to identify, test, and treat those folks. In the past, especially in cases of chlamydia, we haven't been able to test all the partners of certain people because there's, well, to be honest, there's a lot.
Which might be why they have the infections.
That's probably part of the reason. And so we're really trying to catch up and find all the, identify all those partners and then identify the partners from them. So it'll be an outgoing circle of contacts to find them all. And if we can, if they're in our county, we'll do the testing and treatment in one of the three counties here. If they're now outside the county, we'll refer them to their county health department. So we have about 24 months to get this done. We're very excited to get started. And so I think that's really the essence of it. So
are you specifically targeting drug users?
Not necessarily, but I think that the incidence of the STIs we've seen in our county is probably at least, if not causal, at least related to the incidence of use of methamphetamine that we've seen, the increase in that. And so they're probably tied together. Now, no one's really looked at that, but it's not coincidental. It's probably something that is actually causal. So we want to make sure that we target everyone in the entire county who may be susceptible, which is all ages, all genders, to make sure that they're also have the ability to be tested and treated if we come to find out who they are. But in the meantime, through our harm reduction program, we are offering testing and saying that they can come to the health department. We could do those tests, and there's no cost for any of this. We want to make sure that the idea is to treat them and not make it another barrier that they can't pay for it.
Why do you think the rates of these infections, particularly chlamydia, are higher in our area?
Well, a lot of speculation. Probably has something to do with the, there aren't a lot of providers in the area. This is a kind of a transient place on the coast. You know, we have a lot of tourists come and go. We also have the fishing and logging industries that are kind of seasonal. So I think we see them during the busiest times. There's lots of busyness going on. And then on the other times, we don't. So I think that because of the influx of people coming and going, I think that's why we're seeing an increase overall in our population based on the the influx of folks coming in. It's also probably tied to the fact that, you know, with the increase of drug use, that those two things have always been sort of tied together.
Well, and I understand, if I'm remembering correctly, Clatsop County and I believe Tillamook County have among the highest rates of alcoholism in the state also. Do you know if that's true?
I do believe that is true, yes. Okay. So there's probably something to that too.
To tie in with
that. I think addictions and sexually transmitted infections are closely tied together.
Okay. And tell me what your approach is to targeting these users, or not just users, but people with these infections?
So if someone for the general public, if they approach their own public provider, if they have one of those diseases and they are tested and proven to have it, they have to be reported to the local, to the public health lab at the state. And then we get the results of those and then we follow up from that. So anybody who comes forward and gets tested or treated at any facility that's health related, we actually get those reports and the name and address and phone number, try to find them. So that's how we're going to find these folks. And then once we have them in the health department, we can actually do the interviews and say, you know, for the sake of your partners, you know, who are they? How do we get a hold of them so we can test and treat them as well?
For somebody who is, say, on meth, how challenging is it to convince them to, one, notify their partners and then to do whatever is necessary to keep from spreading the infection and treat their own infection?
That's an interesting question. We haven't really figured out how we're going to do that yet. But I do think that, you know, when any user of any particular drug has a moment of clarity, they will see that maybe there's some value in having those testing treatments. So, you know, now we have, like, the Washington State just declared a hepatitis A outbreak from all the use of needles in their state. Now that may help us also drive people to come in and get tested who are actually using needles to inject drugs. So, you know, there's HIV rates are increasing, hepatitis A rates are increasing, hepatitis C rates are increasing. We have all these different things all being driven by the same problem. So I think that we're just trying to chip off the edges here, and really at the this is the first time that the three counties are going to concentrate on a two-year effort to really reduce it.
You just mentioned HIV rates are increasing, and that is the virus that causes AIDS, is that correct?
That's correct.
So I'm just wondering, I'm surprised to hear that, just because, say, 20 years ago people were in such fear about it, because at that time it was not very treatable, and I believe was almost certainly, if not a death sentence, at least much more serious than today without the available treatments. Why do you think that's on the rise today?
Well, I think that, like you just mentioned, that, you know, 20 years ago, HIV was a death sentence. Now you can take drugs, and actually in public health, we consider HIV a chronic disease now. So you can actually get your viral loads, which they measure from your blood test, down to nearly non-existent from the drugs you take. Now, the flip side of that is extremely expensive for those to pay for these drugs. And if they're on OHP or some other social medicine, that'll be an expense that we all have to pay. So the idea is, why don't we do some prevention so we can get people to not have HIV so that we don't have these expenses and change their lifestyle. So I think that that's where the HIV and hepatitis C, you really are seeing it from using dirty needles is where it's coming from, people sharing. So that's one of the things we're really trying to do with our harm reduction, is get those dirty needles out of the issue, and try to make sure we have clean disposable needles that are no longer going to be shared. If we can do that, that's going to start dropping some rates. And we've actually seen some, anecdotally anyway, some rates of like cellulitis, which is also caused from the use of dirty needles, in our county has dropped by over 15% from just our efforts in harm reduction.
Well, and since you mentioned that, talk a little bit about the harm reduction needle exchange program that the health department offers.
Yeah, so three times. So since October 2017, we have done weekly harm reduction events in Seaside, Warrenton, and Astoria. We have designated places. The hospital in Providence, Providence Seaside Hospital, has allowed us to be on their property and hold it there. We're also at Clatsop Behavior Health and their parking lot, and then we're right behind Safeway in Astoria. And every Thursday, we hold these events, and people who wish to come and see us, they can exchange their needles on a one-for-one basis. At the same time, we give them clean needles, we give them sharps containers to dispose of them properly, and we also provide naloxone kits and train them on how to use them. And right now, from our statistics, we've shown that we've actually directly and indirectly saved 75 lives from overdose reversals.
Because of the giving away of the naloxone kits?
That's correct.
Wow. And explain what those are for people who aren't familiar with them.
So the naloxone is a drug that reverses the effects of heroin. The effect of heroin, if you overdose, is that you stop breathing. So it slows down your respiratory system to a point that you just stop breathing. So the naloxone is an injectable kind, and you inject it and or up the nose. We have both nasal and injectable. I mean, that reverses that and brings you into an immediate withdrawal, and the whole effect of the heroin goes away. So that's what naloxone does. And we train people who wants to carry that with them if they are their partner or their child or their friend happens to be a heroin addict and they happen to overdose, you'd be able to revive them without calling 911, which may be too late when they got there.
And just so I heard you correctly, you said you've probably saved 75 lives in this county alone?
Yeah, we've documented at least 75.
Wow. And that's due to a program that was started by a woman whose son died of a heroin overdose?
Yeah. So Jordan's Hope for Recovery is our partner, Carrie Strickland. She's our partner that goes with us throughout all the harm reduction programs everywhere. And she's the one who distributes the naloxone and does the training. And she has a strong passion for folks who are on heroin and other drugs. She understands the shame and stigma that comes with that. And so our real goal is not so much, you know, the needle is the carrot. What we're trying to do is get folks into rehabilitation and treatment. And we've actually been able to get folks into 34 to 35 people have actually gone into treatment from our contacts.
Wow, that's significant. And I know you've told me the number, but it's pretty impressive. Since you began the program almost 2 years ago, how many needles have been exchanged?
Some in the neighborhood of 460,000.
And that's just in our county, our small rural county. Wow, that's hard to fathom.
Mm-hmm.
So getting back to the new program on targeting sexually transmitted infections, you do not need insurance, you mentioned, in order to come and get treated at the health department?
No, they do not.
So what would they need to do?
They could either show up. We're open Monday through Friday and request that, you know, they have testing done, and then we would do that for them. And that's really all they have to do.
Okay.
They can also call the health department at 503-325-8500 and make an appointment that is better for their schedule. So that's one of two ways. Another way they could do it is if they already have a primary care provider, they could also have an appointment with them and have the same testing and done.
And your clinic is at 8th and Exchange in Astoria?
Correct. We're at 820 Exchange Street, Suite 100, and everyone is welcome.
Okay. You don't have a clinic elsewhere in the county, do you?
We do not.
Okay. And I imagine all your services for this type of treatment are confidential?
Absolutely. We are 100% HIPAA compliant.
Okay. So federal privacy regulations. Absolutely. That's great. Tell me about some of the side effects, or not side effects, but consequences of getting these infections.
So with chlamydia, the long-term effect for females is you can actually get pelvic inflammatory disease. And if you let that go long enough, you can become infertile. So there's a pretty big consequence for young women who get chlamydia and don't treat it. Sometimes chlamydia can be noticed. So that's why it's important for partners to notify other partners if they have these diseases. Gonorrhea is another disease that you can get. And it's, of course, it's becoming now important to treat it, because we have seen now in places like Hawaii and other states where gonorrhea is becoming untreatable by our current palette of antibiotics. So it's important to get those done, because if you let them go untreated, then we can have mutated gonorrhea bacteria, and we can create super germs. We don't want to do that. And syphilis, of course, has been with us since time eternal, but we have seen an increase in syphilis cases. And that one's especially important because eventually it does have a mortality at the end if you don't get it treated. It can cause different things. We, especially for pregnant women, we don't want to have pregnant women, because they can pass it through into birth into their children, and they have serious consequences to that.
You mentioned a bit about this just in your previous answer, but how treatable are these infections?
They're all very treatable now. So we have the ability,
if caught early,
still chlamydia and gonorrhea are still treatable. Syphilis, you got to get it early. There is a longer period of time you have to take the drugs, but they're all still very treatable.
Okay. Can using condoms prevent the spread of these diseases?
Oh, absolutely. So that's part of our goal, is that not only do we want to test and treat, but then we want to educate folks. So we want to make sure that they're doing protectives, the most protective thing. And really, it's either abstinence or use a condom. Those are the two things. Use barrier protection. Those are the best methods to prevent STIs. And from another aspect, from harm reduction, is don't share needles. That's the other way to protect yourself. So those diseases are also transmissible, of course, as blood to blood. So you don't share needles, you won't get syphilis and hepatitis C, HIV, those kind of things.
And does the health department give away condoms?
For free.
So if somebody wanted to, they could just walk in and...
And actually, we keep a little bowl outside the office, so you don't even have to walk into the office. You can get grab a handful and you can have
them
for
free. So you
don't
have to be embarrassed?
You do not. There's no reason to be embarrassed.
Okay. And you're not checking somebody's ID or finding out how old they are?
Nope, we are not.
All right. If you're just joining me, you are listening to a pre-recorded interview with Clatsop County's Public Health Director, Mike McNichol. He is discussing, among other things, a new department program to reduce the rate of sexually transmitted infections in the county by up to 10% over 2 years. I'm Joan Herman on Perspectives on Coast Community Radio. Reducing the rate of sexually transmitted infections by up to 10%, is that a pretty steep goal, or do you think that's achievable over the next 2 years?
Well, I like to set big goals. I always say, go big or go home. So if we can do that on the coast, a 10% reduction, that would be several hundreds of cases. So I figure that, if we can get even close to that, we'd be doing our job. So I think that I set that goal for the team, for the region, and so we're going to try to see if we can do it.
And will you be working closely with Columbia and Tillamook counties, or are you working independently?
We're working closely. We actually created a team. We'll have a project manager on the Clatsop County side. We'll do disease investigation specialists on the Columbia County. We'll be bringing those to the team, and assistants to do the follow-up and stuff from Tillamook County. That'll be the core team, so they'll be working very closely together.
And how is this program being funded?
So the state is providing funding through the public health modernization state funding. And so that was our project that we wanted to put forth as the region here, is to try to deal with STIs.
And what is the age range that you are seeing these infections in, if you can say that?
We see them in all ages, unfortunately. So as young as 11, as old as 80. We want to make sure that we capture everyone. So we will be doing some assessment on who is the actual targeted range, with a special look at if we're missing some minority populations, to make sure that we have a health equity piece. We're really going to focus on trying to get the message out through social media, sites like Tinder and those kind of things, and make sure those messages get out.
That's a good idea.
Because that's where a lot of things are happening.
Exactly.
So we want to make sure we get that kind of work done as well. So it's going to be a multimedia, multifaceted effort to try to reduce this by 10%.
Do you see many Spanish-speaking families at the department?
We do, especially for WIC.
I'm wondering if those families might be hesitant to come forward for treatment in light of the crackdown on undocumented immigrants.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting thing to see what happens. I think that, we do have some specialists in our department who have worked with the Latinx population, and we'll be relying on them to help us to make those inroads. We have a good, strong partnership with the Lower Columbia Hispanic Council, and I hope to keep that going, and so that we can figure out how to partner together to see if we can reach them in a non-threatening manner. So
yes, because I would imagine it's in everyone's best interest to keep these infections at bay.
Absolutely. If we have even one case that we don't catch, and that happens to be rather promiscuous, then we're right back to where we were.
That's right. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about the hazardous waste treatment facility. We've never had one. We have had hazardous waste treatment collection days, but they've been, once or twice a year?
Yeah.
So how is the facility coming along construction-wise?
So it's coming along nicely. The facility itself is built, actually, if people would like to look at it, if you go to the Clatsop County website and type in household hazardous waste, I've been keeping a chronology of when there was nothing to now what it looks like. So you can actually see it being built in real time. And right now we're at the point where we have the outsides completed. We're waiting to do some paving here pretty quick, and then we're we're going to have it all set up and work on the inside. We're still shooting for an October start date.
Okay. What kinds of products will it be taking?
So household hazardous waste is not is those things that you keep around your house, the pesticides, the herbicides, the cleaners, the degreasers, the used oil, the antifreeze you don't need, the light bulbs you don't use, the batteries that you don't need, those things that are around the house that aren't completely hazardous waste. We're not going to take Agent Orange or anything like that. We're going to take those things that most people have in their house that either we find a lot of people who are doing spring cleaning and they find, hey, look, there's a paint can. I don't even know what's in it. So those are the kind of things that we'll be able to take. Our contractor will characterize those waste, put them in the correct bins, and then send them to the facility for proper recycling.
How important is it that people not throw such items into their general garbage?
It's pretty important. You know, if you think about where that material ends up in a landfill, well, that landfill is not, you know, as much as they try to build them these days to be pretty much resilient to all the outdoors, that material does degrade over time. And if they have toxic chemicals in them, they tend to leach. And when they leach into the groundwater, then you can have major environmental issues. And the more we can cycle anyway is a good thing, because we want to reduce the amount of waste we're sending to the garbage, the end product of where the garbage goes, because that's just going to help us. And then we can actually see some return on those investments, make sure that the paint gets recycled, that those batteries get recycled, those kind of things. That's just going to benefit all of us.
And my understanding that is that any resident, as well as a small business, not a large business, can use the hazardous waste facility once it's up and running?
Right. So there'll be no charge for household hazardous waste disposal or dropping off at the facility for any resident of Clatsop County. For small quantity generators, small businesses, there will be a charge based on the pounds they deliver, because we have to, sometimes their amounts, we have to be more than we would accept from a household. And we have to make the facility operate at an expense we can afford. Mm-hmm. So those folks will be paying a fee, but it's a lot cheaper than having to move them out of county.
And my understanding is you are required from your funding source to be open at least 8 times a year?
Right. So the DEQ, our permit, will require us to be open 8 times. I think we'll be open more like once a month for residential, and then at least once a month for the first beginning, because we've had quite a long period of time since the last roundup. It's been about 3 or 4 years, and so we're going to have a lot of pent-up need, and we recognize that, so we're going to be open more frequently in the beginning, and then we'll get on a more consistent schedule.
This is something, collecting hazardous waste, that I never would have imagined a county health department overseeing. Has it always been that way, that county health departments have been in charge of environmental safety?
Well, so that's the key, right? That's the linkage, is the environmental safety and public health. So it depends on the county. I've worked in counties where solid waste and hazardous waste was part of their process, and others where it was not. So it's really county to county. A lot of counties have their solid waste divisions in their public works, for example.
That makes sense.
In this county, we've moved the household hazardous waste under public health because of the public health implications of the household hazardous waste materials.
And Mike, I'm going to ask you about your recent PhD, which you received earlier this year, because I think it connects with this topic, that you did it on some research on hazardous waste involving farming practices in Yakima County. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So my dissertation was on the perceived health effects of nitrates in groundwater in the lower Yakima River Valley area in Washington State. There's a known nitrate values are higher than what they should be per the state and federal limits on nitrates. And what I was trying to do is, instead of a quantitative, I did a qualitative study, really doing interviews on folks about how they felt about and what they understood, what does that mean to them, and finding out, you know, when I said you have high nitrates in your groundwater, what do you think? A lot of them didn't think much about it. So, there's a little level of education that needed to occur. And the perception of the health risk was very low, when in fact it could be much higher. So it was really an interesting study on what they didn't know versus what they did know.
And you told me before the show that the nitrates were linked with dairy farming. Explain the use of nitrates in dairy farming.
So nitrates in dairy farming comes from when cows poo all over the place, there's high nitrates in their wastes.
Okay.
So those wastes when not properly applied to fields at above agronomic wastes where those fields can absorb that, if it's above that, then the nitrates run through those soils and get into the groundwater. There's also a lot of agricultural work in Yakima where they've spread nitrogen fertilizers, which is very common practice over the history of Yakima.
Right.
So you have those two things combined on a shallow groundwater level, and then so people are still drinking it because that's their only supply of water. So that's where the conflict comes.
That's really interesting. And you mentioned that common mindsets were that people either didn't want to know or they weren't concerned.
I think there was some concern. There was a lack of understanding of the health connection between high nitrates, especially for young children, and some anecdotal evidence. There was some that neural tube defects can be related to high nitrates. So those things are kind of concerning from a public health standpoint. So that was why my interest in the area is what did they understand about those risks and how it what was their perception for their own health and their family's health.
Do you know if anybody's looked at that in Tillamook County, which is a big dairy farming community?
I do not.
Okay. Yeah, because I know we have some listeners down in Tillamook County.
Okay.
You know, another important public health concern that you've talked about with local governing bodies is the proliferation of vaping mm-hmm. among young people, high school age and even younger. Talk a little bit about why you're so concerned about that.
So as most people have probably experienced, they've probably seen vaping, saw someone doing it, or the big vapor that comes out of a car as they're driving past. So vaping has become such a major problem in schools that we met with the school superintendents, and they said that it's a major problem in our schools. And really what we've also found is because vaping has been directly linked to future cigarette smoking, because of the cost, because of the nicotine that's in vaping products, people switch from the expensive vaping to cigarettes in the future. So, and now they've been having cases of people getting pretty serious lung burns, some other mysterious lung diseases like they've found in Wisconsin. And some people are actually coming down and just being sick. They call it Nick sick from the nicotine that's so high. One pod of in the Juul product has enough nicotine as an entire pack of cigarettes. So these folks don't realize the amount of dose they're getting when they smoke these things. So when you see the advertisements that says this is a great alternative to smoking, there's been no proof that that's true at all. The FDA says they've never studied that. So our concern is pretty big because it does seem to be a gateway to tobacco when we've been in the state of Oregon, across the nation, we've been pretty good at dealing with the tobacco issues. This again now has come along, and now we have another problem that we have to deal with.
We have just about a minute left, but sure. I'm just curious, does the health department plan to have some sort of education campaign in the schools? What can you do to try to tackle this?
So at the policy level, that's where we're taking it on. We've already spoken to the cities about the tobacco retail licensing. And as part of that tobacco retail licensing process, all folks who are retailers of tobacco and tobacco products will receive a license from us. And we'll make sure that from that licensing, we'll do inspections and make sure that they're following the Tobacco 21 rule from the state. So that's how we're going to deal with it. And one of the major pieces of that is a flavor ban. So those things will get out of the way that are very attractive to new smokers.
Thank you. Unfortunately, we are out of time. I want to thank my guest, Mike McNichol, the director of Clatsop County Public Health, for coming into the studio to speak about some new department programs as well as follow up on existing services. Thanks, Mike.
No, thank you.
Clatsop County Public Health offers a diverse range of services to the county's 37,000 plus residents, from family planning to immunizations to disaster preparedness. McNichol has served as the department's director since 2016, and prior to that as its environmental health supervisor. This is Perspectives, and I'm your host, Joan Herman. The show is brought to you in part by a grant from Clatsop County Cultural Coalition. Perspectives was engineered today by Dylan Hauser-Schulk. The show can be heard on the stations of Coast Community Radio. You also can find show podcasts on the station's website. If you would like to contact me, send me an email to coastperspectives@coastradio.org. Thanks for listening.